while we were marching through Georgia. Everybody swing your honey, swing your high and low. The allemande left for the old left and around the ring you go. A grand old right to left walk on your heel and toe. Promenade that pretty gal to Georgia.
One of the things I've always found endlessly fascinating is tax protesters. As I've always said, Moving Through Georgia is a Georgia history podcast, yada, yada, yada. But for today, I'm going off topic. It's April Fool's Day and the height of tax season. When I was a senior in high school, I was in two social studies classes, and they were basically social studies classes for seniors that didn't need the credit and were running out the clock. One of them was economics, and the other one was anthropology. Those are the kinds of classes that you need to write a term paper at the end of the semester. So some friends of mine and I, we decided to write the most outrageous term papers we could possibly dream up. My friend Andy wrote a paper for economics saying the United States should change from capitalism to an anarcho-syndicatist commune like the Monty Python movie. Another friend wrote a paper outlining the reasons why Santa Claus was a communist. My friend Chris wrote a paper for anthropology that ended up with him writing a letter to the teacher stating that the opinions in the paper were not his own opinions, and I think he would have gotten in a lot more trouble except he got the books for his paper from his father, and I think they didn't want to make a big deal out of it. My paper for economics was something along the lines of why I'm not paying my income tax, and it was basically just an outline of some tax protests I had read about. Well, enter the internet and a lot of information flying around and very little of it being checked. If you do a little basic research, you will find lots and lots of reasons not to pay your income tax. Some have sort of a grain of truth but don't pan out in court, and some of them are completely crazy. So, for fun and for April Fool's Day, we're going to deviate from Georgia history, and I'm going to tell you one reason you shouldn't have to pay your income tax. It has nothing to do with Georgia. It's all about Ohio. As you can probably guess, the 16th Amendment establishing the income tax wasn't the most popular, and there are thousands of amateur constitutional scholars who will happily explain why it's invalid and the income tax is unconstitutional. You could read a book called The Law That Never Was, or pay $29.95 to some guy on the internet who will share his secret for tax freedom with you. I'm just sharing one reason with you, and please remember it's April Fool's Day, all right? Even though this is all over the internet, even though a lot of people believe this and people have taken this to court, it will not work out for you. It's never worked in court, and it will get you a $5,000 fine for filing a frivolous tax return. But out of all the arguments I could have presented, when you're done hearing this, you might even agree with me that there might be something there. This is Moving Through Georgia, and today we're discussing how the income tax is unconstitutional because Ohio didn't become a state until 1953. The story begins innocently enough. As the 150th anniversary of Ohio's statehood approached, people in the Capitol were assembling a display of documents to commemorate the event. As they went through the paperwork, however, they noticed something. There was no official record of a vote in Congress making Ohio a state. Illinois and Indiana had been voted on. One of the proclamations reads in part, "The state of Indiana shall be one and is hereby declared to be one of the United States of America." There wasn't such a vote for Ohio. So maybe a mistake was made. Everybody had a pretty good sense of humor about the subject. Ohio's legislature wrote a proclamation on parchment, and a rider in 19th century clothes brought it to Washington on horseback. Congress passed the vote, and President Eisenhower signed off on it. Pretty much everybody got a good laugh at that and thought it was a good way to draw attention to Ohio's anniversary. And does that vote even matter? Well, some would point out that the Constitution isn't that clear as to how a state is added to the Union. Specifically, Article 4, Section 3 states, "New states may be admitted by the Congress into this Union, but no new state shall be formed or erected within the jurisdiction of any other state." It goes on a little bit more than that. It's that first sentence that matters. It says that new states can be admitted by Congress. In 1802, Congress passed what scholars would call an Enabling Act, entitled An Act of the People of the Eastern Division of the Northwest Territory of the River Ohio to form a constitution and state government, and for the admission of such into the Union on equal footing with the other states and for other purposes. To some, this sounds like, as soon as the legislature and such were established, Ohio is now a state. Well, yes, except that in the case of every previous state, the Congress had specifically voted and used the words admitting, not enabling. If you're reading a book or web page written by a tax protester, every word matters. Every word that deviates from what was normally used matters. Every dropped semicolon, every capitalized word, every little detail can be brought to bear. Also, and I promise not to get too bogged down in small details, the General Ordinance for the Northwest Territory, which includes Ohio, Indiana, and Illinois, allows the states to form their own legislatures. After the federal government certifies that the state government and legislature is in accordance with the United States Constitution, that state may be admitted to the Union. This inspection and certification was carried out for Indiana and Illinois, but not Ohio. So, to sum it up, Congress had been in the habit of admitting states into the Union with a very clear vote. In the case of Ohio, they basically kind of implied that it would be a state as soon as it put a legislature together. They never really voted it up or down. As a final point, keep in mind that Ohio celebrates its anniversary of statehood on the first day the state legislature met, not the day their state was approved and voted on by Congress, like a few other states. And here's the big question. Who cares? Some paperwork was missed. The vote was never taken. There are some findings from a few state committees in the 1950s that, right, Ohio didn't follow the path to statehood that had become the standard, but none of them went so far as to say Ohio wasn't a state. It was just a legal anomaly. Nobody gave it much thought until the 70s, when a few court cases caught people's attention. If you accept as law and fact that Ohio was not properly admitted to the Union, and therefore is not a state, but is still, in fact, part of the Northwest Territory, well, saddle up and let's go. We have a line of imaginary tax protesters formed up to give their arguments before an imaginary judge. The first may argue that Congress is specifically prohibited from passing an ex post facto law. That means they can't pass a law that takes effect after the law is passed. You can't pass a law for, let's say, computer fraud in February and then prosecute someone for committing fraud in January. Making Ohio a state in 1953 does not make Ohio a state in 1803. The judge may explain to the line of protesters that Ohio is a state because we've been treating it like a state for 150 years. There's a lot of precedent, and changing anything will just make a mess. Not so, says another protester. If it were found that the judge in the case had never passed the bar exam, even after years and years of service, the state would not allow him to continue as a judge just because everyone was accustomed to it. What does this have to do with the income tax? The 16th Amendment created the income tax and was ratified by 42 out of 48 states, more than enough to clear the 3/4 minimum. Even if Ohio had no right to ratify the amendment, it still passes. So with that, the judge begins collecting his things and starts getting ready to go home. After all, the argument's settled, but not so fast. Another protester states that before the amendment went to the states, it was signed off by President Taft. Taft, a former lawyer from Cincinnati, Ohio. A person born in the Northwest Territory and not technically a natural-born citizen of the United States. Add to that the fact that two presidential elections would have gone the opposite way without Ohio's electoral votes. and the fact that 7 presidents were born in Ohio, and none of them may have been qualified to be president. Several cases went to court. I'm looking at an article from the Pittsburgh Law Review here, and this article lists some from the 70s right up to 2006. And often the judge would dismiss any claims of Ohio not being a state by simply saying that it looked like a state and it acted like a state for so long that any statute of limitations on this matter would have run out. One fellow tried getting out of a murder conviction by claiming the Ohio court had no jurisdiction. Another tried the same thing to get out of a monetary judgment against him. This Law Review article makes a good case that early cases were poorly handled by the courts, and judges in later cases relied on those judgments as precedent without considering if they were valid. And the judge in this case by now would have slipped out the back door and is long gone. All in all, this Law Review writer finishes by saying there's a good case for Ohio still being part of the Northwest Territory. Failure for any real review of this subject is blamed on both the courts and the people bringing cases. The people suing in federal court that the tax is unconstitutional were, of course, acting as their own lawyers and often lacked the knowledge or any legal terminology to make their case. The courts treated them like kooks and didn't give their argument any serious attention. They weren't dismissing the argument, they were dismissing the people that brought the argument. All right, that's something for you to think about while you're filling out your 1040. If a modern court did decide that Ohio was not a state until 1953, it probably wouldn't make a huge difference. There are some questions that would have to be settled. One is, does legislation have a statute of limitations? Is a law that was passed 150 years ago still a law and unchangeable because it has stood for so long? The other question is, would those presidents who had come from Ohio still have been president? The income tax would stand because enough states had ratified the amendment, and there hasn't been a court case yet to determine if someone born in a territory could become president. We came close when Barack Obama was born in Hawaii in 1961, just 2 years after becoming a state. Actually, the author suggests that the only 2 real changes that would be made would be that the segments of the World War II Memorial and the Washington Monument that mention Ohio would have to be removed. Okay, this is Moving Through Georgia, a Georgia history podcast that focuses on Northeast Georgia, but not today. It's April Fool's Day, so we just had a little fun and I got to share some of my legal nerdism with you. If you haven't paid your taxes yet, pay your taxes. Don't play this episode in court, please. But if you want to do some more research on tax protests, there are some interesting places you could look. You could start with the First Amendment. You could say that filling out a return violates your First Amendment freedom of speech because it requires you to write information on a tax return. You could say that the form violates your Fourth Amendment right to privacy. Another favorite argument is that the 1040 does specifically ask you to note any income brought in by illegal means, which is technically a violation of your Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. If you want to get into minute legal details, which people have done, you could claim that the 1040 form does not have an OMB control number. Now, this is a small part of what was known as the Paperwork Reduction Act. Bring that argument up at an IRS office and they will pull out the form and point to the OMB control number that's been in the corner since 1981. And lastly, even though it's April Fool's Day, I'm not making fun of anyone. Anyone who feels that they're not being treated fairly under the Constitution should take it to court. I mean, that's what constitutions are for, to be tested every once in a while. The arguments I've given you today are arguments that have been tried many times in many courts and have never worked. You'll have to be innovative and try a different angle. And if you do, I'm looking forward to reading about it. Left hand around the ring you go, a grand old right to left walk on your heel and toe, promenade that pretty gal to Georgia. That's all.